Talk Radio 570 KVI. Matt, I hope you had a great weekend. It was a little bit wild. We, of course, over the weekend, there were two big shows. There was the huge air show on the peninsula, Bremerton Air Show. And then, of course, there was Freedom Fest, which was late afternoon and into the evening at Brian Haywood's Willowcrest Farm. And I was your MC, and there good crowd and great people on hand. Brandi Cruz and Brian Haywood spoke. Dave Reichert was there. Joe Kent, a congressional candidate from the 3rd District, was there, gave a great speech. I was with Brandi, the MC. I got to say a few words as well. And afterwards, because I came in on two wheels and I made sure I parked the bike in front of the KVI booth at the very large cavernous area for where all the vendors were. And people were getting their picture taken in front of the bike. And afterwards, just hanging out with KVI listeners, and I said, you know, looks like there's some storm clouds headed our direction. Several other people noticed the same thing. And since I'm on two wheels, I said, maybe I'll just go ahead and take off. It was about 8 o'clock or so. I made it in to my home in Bellevue 10 minutes before the biggest deluge of rain and lightning. I saw the lightning in the distance as I was approaching Bellevue. I went, you know, I hope I'm able to get there before the cloud burst.
Ominous sign, right?
And I, like I said, 10 minutes, and then came this massive downpour. Over 1,100 lightning strikes, according to Como's Rebecca Stevenson.
What's most exceptional is the number of lightning strikes we had. Yesterday, we had 1,151 lightning strikes, and today we got up to 107. You think about the maximum amperage that came with these lightning strikes. Let's say 78,000 there. 78,000 amperes, boy, that could power 780 homes, small homes in Seattle. That is the superpower electrical action we had this weekend.
Oh,
well, that's so. the electrical engineering report I didn't expect on the newscast. But 1,100 lightning strikes. I have a buddy who's out in West Seattle. He's on the hill above the old steel factory.
It used to be Bethlehem Steel. Then it was Salmon Bay Steel. Now, then it was Nucor.
So
I'm not sure what steel it is now.
He's got
I know our listeners.
Sweeping 270 degree view, basically, of everything over Harbor Island Beacon Hill and downtown Seattle and everything. And he was telling me he's never been in a electrical storm where he saw that much lightning all in one place, all in one event.
Yeah, all over the place. And I'm surprised. Well, of course, since it happened, luckily, with a rainstorm, we didn't have a lot of fires. In fact, none that I'm aware of as a result. Okay, big week in Chicago. The Democratic National Convention will be underway. And yes, KVI is on the ground. It's amazing how many media outlets are not on the ground. You've got your major networks, of course. They're all there. We have our friend Jeff Pogula from KNWN, the station formerly known as Como News. He's over there. We hung out with Jeff in Milwaukee during the Republican convention in July. But we do have young Zach on the ground, and he will be reporting several times every show on what he is seeing in Chicago. Now, let me set the stage for you here about this convention, because I have been following this rather closely, so you won't have to. Over 1,000 members of CPD, Chicago Police Department, have called in sick. It's not because they don't want to keep the peace. It's because they're afraid of what will happen if they do keep the peace and they have to get rough with some of the protesters. So there's that tension going on right now. They have an uber woke prosecutor, Kim Fox. This is the lady who gave that sweetheart deal to Jussie Smollett. And is notorious for dismissing charges against not just miscreants and misdemeanants, but even felons. She is the reason why Chicago has led the nation in murders now for 10 years. I think she's been there for 8 of those 10 years. Things have only gotten worse in Chicago. And so the police are, at the very least, you could say, pensive. They know they're in trouble. If they, let me put it this way. The last time the Democrats had a convention in Chicago that got rough was 1968. Okay, the 68 Democratic Convention was a near riot inside the convention hall and an actual riot outside the convention hall. The working class cops just mixed it up and got the better of the radical college anti-war, anti-cop, anti-American. There were far left extremists mixed in with just regular anti-war activists. And the police knew that the mayor, Richard Daley, had their back. So they pulled their sticks and they gave better than they got. This year, the mayor of Chicago is radical liberal Brandon Johnson. If Brandon Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, was a Seattle politician, he would be right out there with Shama Sawant and Lorena Gonzalez and Tammy Morales. Okay, he was a union organizer for the greediest and most destructive teachers union in America, the Chicago Teachers Association. He was, do you remember the misfit mayor of Chicago, Lori Lightfoot?
Yeah, was she voted out after just the one term, I think?
She lasted one term. Yeah. But here's the thing. She lost because she was not liberal enough. And the Chicago political machine, not the old Daley machine, the leftist progressive machine, put forward Brandon Johnson. And so Brandon Johnson, whose response to Chicago's record crime is to call for racial reparations, whose response to entire areas of Chicago neighborhoods being vacated by businesses is to say, well, if we're not going to have grocery stores that will locate in our neighborhoods, we'll have government-run grocery stores. Now, the reason there are not grocery stores is not because they don't want to be there. It's that they lose money being there because of all of the crime and the shoplifting, and it's not safe for their employees. It's not safe for a lot of their customers. So this is, you've got a mayor whose response from, you know, concerned Democrats that, hey, we don't want to see a replay of 68. So, you know, I hope the mayor will make sure that the city will be very safe and locked down from any violence from protesters. The response from Mayor Johnson was to give the pro-Hamas protesters clearance to set up a stage with microphones and amplifiers. So, in other words, if Brandon Johnson was not the mayor of Chicago, he would be out there with the pro-Hamas protesters, the so-called pro-Palestinians. But they're not pro-Palestinian. They're pro-Hamas. They're anti-Israel. They're anti-Semitic. So that's one of the things we're going to ask young Zach about is, you know, what's the feeling in the air right now? Usually it's excitement and drama and maybe even euphoria. When your opponent is way down, sometimes the mood is a bit more grim for Republicans. The mood was one of determination and destiny, that the person who had tried 2 days before, 3 days before, to assassinate President Trump and did not succeed, only wounded the president, was their sign that Donald Trump would make his first public appearance since the assassination attempt at the Republican convention, and it would light the place up, and it did. So the Republicans had a very, very galvanizing, unifying, successful convention. The Democrats hope for the same thing. They want a coronation for Kamala. We will see whether that happens based on what goes on the streets. So that's part of what we will be talking about. We will also be talking about Kamala has now formally introduced her economic policy. She wants the federal government to control prices of what you buy to prevent corporate price gouging. This is not going over well. Now, the progressives, the far left, they like it, but these are the people who've delivered 9% inflation. These are the people who've delivered prices that are about 20% higher overall than they were when Biden took office, and far, far more than that for items such as eggs or milk or bread, you know, basic foodstuffs. And you could look at, you know, the price of gasoline, your power bill, just about everything way above that 20%. So we will talk about her plan. It's, again, not getting a very good hearing right now. And then Kamala Harris speaking without notes sounds like you would expect Kamala Harris to sound when she speaks without notes. We've got several several examples of that. So join Talk Radio 570 KVI exclusive coverage, live reports from the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. We've got eyes on the inside from Chi-Town with young Zach. And Ari Hoffman will also have access to young Zach. This is all presented by our friends at All Red Heating and Cooling. All Red Heating and Cooling. All Red wants to make Chicago all red, but I don't think it's going to happen. Certainly not.
Well, the way they're going about it, they just might.
It is 18 and a half minutes after 6 o'clock, and a lot of other stuff going on, local news as well. It's all coming your way. On the radio program of record, the John Carlson Show, good morning. It's 23 minutes after 6 o'clock. You know, I got to tell you, one of the things I loved about Freedom Fest, and this is always a highlight when I do public appearances, it's when individuals come up. People come up, introduce themselves, sometimes individually, sometimes it's a couple, occasionally a family. And they say what a difference the show makes. Why they go out of their way to listen to the show, why they go out of their way to keep listening to the show, even, you know, they might be sitting in the car in the driveway listening because they get so much out of it. It's so worthwhile. And it means so much. It never gets old hearing that. And I'm hearing it more and more. And it feels so good to have that kind of feedback from listeners. So thank you all very much. And, of course, I heard compliments for Philip J. Vandervoort III and the radio legend as well. Philip J. ready with the social medias.
Yeah, let's jump in and kind of pick up on what you were hitting on in the last segment a little bit about the KVI activities over the weekend. You talked about Freedom Fest. And then Big Mike, the producer for Ari Hoffman's afternoon show, was out at the Bremerton Air Show over the weekend, the social media sweep sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. And Big Mike said it was a similar situation out there at the Bremerton Air Show. He says, what a crazy end. This is what he posted on his handle, at Mike on KVI. What a crazy end to the Bremerton Air Show after converting the booth into night mode. The air boss advised us to clear out as the storm rolled in. Hope you made it home safe.
Wow.
And he says he'll give his update on Ari's show this afternoon for what he experienced out there. But it sounds like similar circumstances as the Bremerton Air Show was wrapping up. They had to hustle to get clear and get out of the storm's way and then get home safely. But it sounds like Mike did. Hopefully, like he indicated, everybody else did too. You were teasing some of the moments of the Kamala Harris hotly anticipated speech and unveiling on her big economic policy. And on Friday afternoon before it happened, people were making their comments about what they might expect from a Kamala Harris big unveiling on a policy speech and a policy platform for her presidential campaign. And somebody wrote this, and I just want to ask you if this is fair or unfair. In response on one thread, somebody posted, Kamala Harris is Fidel Castro in drag. And is that fair or is that unfair?
It's unfair.
Okay.
Because Fidel Castro
never wore pantsuits was one part of it.
Yes. No. Fidel Castro had a lot of what you would call native intelligence.
Okay.
He was smart, and he was strategic, and he was he knew exactly what he was doing and why he was doing it. Kamala Harris is not that smart and is simply following a script that others, i.e. the progressive left, right for her.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a smart lefty, think Elizabeth Warren. Okay, she's just as wrong as Kamala Harris, but she's smart and she's strategic.
Okay,
Kamala Harris is basically just following, like Joe Biden.
I mean,
by
yeah,
the way.
She's
Joe
a lawyer.
Biden's not very bright either. They follow the scripts that others write for them.
Yeah, Kamala Harris, a lawyer, not an economic savant of any kind, and unfortunately, it shows when she starts to try and speak about the importance of those things.
And not that good a lawyer. She has been a successful politician as a lawyer because she was a San Francisco Democrat in San Francisco. Gee, what party's going to win the DA's race there? She was a Democrat running in blue state California for attorney general. gee, you know, what party wins there? Yeah. By the way, she barely did win. And then on to the U.S. Senate. So she's only had to satisfy one party all of her life.
Yeah. Hasn't really had to reach out across the aisle too much in that respect. Big difference between Northern California election or a California state election and a national election, right?
Yeah.
We have an update on the race for public lands commissioner in Washington related to the August primary.
Yes.
After Friday's latest tabulation, the second and third place race has shrunk from 5,400 votes in favor of Dave Up the Grove as of last Tuesday down to 949 votes as of Friday. So Sue Cool Peterson, who is a Republican, was trailing by 5,400 votes last Tuesday. She's got it down to about 949 right now. So she's whittled that down quite a bit. There's going to have to be probably some sort of hand recount here, isn't there?
I think there's only about 10,000 votes left.
There's that many remaining to count?
As far as I knew last time I checked.
Okay.
But
because you had predicted last week, Dave Up the Grove had a kind of a quick swing after the second and third nights of ballot tabulation that he jumped from third place to second place. Because, and then you said that, hey, there's going to be some more ballots to tabulate. They're going to be coming in from more conservative voting areas of the state.
County.
And
yeah.
Sure enough, just like you indicated, she's whittled it down to 949 votes. But if there's 10,000 more to go.
Excuse me, there's 3,500.
3,500.
Okay.
Still, though, 3,500 on the trajectory she's on. If that holds,
and
she would probably get really close if she doesn't second place.
Many of them are coming. For instance, the county with the most votes outstanding is Stevens County in eastern Washington,
okay.
One of the most conservative counties.
I don't think Dave Up the Grove has much name recognition in that corner of the state.
I'm going to guess that she's going to get to within 350, 400
yeah,
votes.
Yeah, I could see it being just a couple hundred, but my gut tells me she might come
but
up just
wow.
an eyelash short.
And I think he outspent her.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
20.
Well, I mean.
No.
Yeah, that's
on.
Right. I had the stat last week, didn't I?
20-1.
Yeah. Yeah. 500-something thousand to $29,000 for Sue Peterson.
Not even close.
Peterson.
And she did so much with so little.
Absolutely.
So good for you, Sue Kuehl Peterson. You are listening to the radio program of record, The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. What a week we have in front of us. Live coverage from the Democratic National Convention and prelude about Chicago, one of the biggest failing cities in America, in some ways is the perfect place for them to be meeting. I'll explain why coming up. Welcome back, everybody, to the John Carlson Show this Monday morning. Been a crazy weekend weather-wise. We had our block party, our annual block party in our neighborhood, and we host it. We actually have it in our driveway, and lots of the neighborhood showed up. It was yesterday afternoon, so we got rained out twice. We got hit with a rain squall. And everybody just, you know, under the trees. And then it cleared after about 10, 15 minutes. And everybody started, you know, partying again, socializing, congregating. And about 20 minutes later, another one comes. So it's just one of those weekends.
You remember any kind of a storm like this in August? And kudos to our friends at Como Weather Center. Good friend. They nailed it Saturday. Get home, get your boat back to the dock by 6 p.m., because afterwards it's going to hit, and it's going to hit all night long, and it did.
And by the way, you know, you're so right. Weather forecasting has gotten so much more precise.
And this is the worst. This is the most challenging region to do weather. Ask anybody nationwide.
And I am so glad, I'm so gratified that those lightning strikes came in the middle of a downpour, because if they had hit dry tinder, yikes.
Only heard of one new fire yesterday near Fish Lake, Lake Wenatchee, northwest of Leavenworth.
All right.
That was out of all that lightning.
So I told you that KVI has eyes on the inside of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And it's all brought to us, presented by our friends, longtime friends now, at All Red Heating and Cooling. We like these guys, and we like the fact that young Zach is back there in Chicago chronicling everything that we need to know. How you doing this morning, young Zach?
Oh, doing pretty well, like you were talking about with the weather. My flight got delayed with all the storms going on, but we made it here to Chicago. We're in here right now in the United Center where the Bulls play, where the convention is about to kick off later today. And it's good so far. You know, none of the delegates are here, so that's making my day a little better.
Okay. However, how long have you been in Chicago now?
About 24 hours now.
Okay. You were in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is where the Republican National Convention was, about 90 minutes away, frankly. What is the difference? You know, the mood in the air, the things you see, the security, whether there's excitement or whether there's anxiety. What are you seeing, the difference between Milwaukee and Chicago as the Democrats prepare to launch their convention?
Well, I think you nailed it, John. You said anxiety. We've been talking to some of the Uber drivers that are nervous about the protests and not only what that's going to mean for traffic, but we talked to one of our Uber drivers this morning who lives just a few blocks from the mayor's house, and he said he's even having a difficult time getting to and from his home because they've blocked that radius off as well to protect the mayor of Chicago. So there's certainly a level of anxiety that in Chicago that did not exist in Milwaukee.
Interesting. Interesting. As you know, they had very much almost a military type locked up military zone for the convention area. I assume that's the same thing going on there?
Yep, exactly the same thing. The only difference is in Milwaukee, just the location of the convention center that they were using as a facility and the arena were all kind of in that one perimeter. Here we have two separate perimeters in very different parts of the city. So that's causing a little bit of extra stress on the traffic issue here as well. But if you want to go to the media center, or there's a whole bunch of caucuses happening over in the McCormick Place, which is their convention center. That's their own perimeter. And then we have our own perimeter over here at the United Center where the convention is happening.
So have you seen any of the walking abortion pills yet?
I have not seen any of those yet.
They have actually been parading in advance of the convention. The abortion rights lobby is not only holding up signs, they have about half a dozen people dressed as large abortion pills, day after pills, marching along with them. There's a massive 2.5-story IUD, intrauterine device, that they have on display. And not only that, the Planned Parenthood of Great Rivers, which operates throughout Missouri and Illinois, is parking its mobile health clinic near the DNC tomorrow and Wednesday, handing out, or performing, I should say, free vasectomies and abortions. Medication abortions and vasectomies being exclusively offered by Planned Parenthood at the DNC. Have you missed that one so far? Have you seen their rolling clinic?
Like I said, I have not seen that yet. We've been spending most of our time getting our gear set up. Okay. But I will keep an eye out and try to avoid that as best I can.
It
sounds like the 2-story IUD is going to be hard to miss, though.
It's just some of the things that are there that you probably wouldn't have seen at a Republican national convention. Zach,
and speaking of that, there's a couple of things on the inside of the convention hall here that I've noticed as well. They have a giant ADA ramp that goes about past the 3-point line that I don't believe is necessary for ADA compliance. It appears to be quite a show of accessibility. There's a quiet room. There's a sensory room.
A quiet room. A quiet room.
Just if you need to get away for a minute.
Mike, can we send Pramila Jayapal to the quiet room? She's back there. Okay. Oh, very good. All right. There's a quiet. Well, interesting. Yeah, that's one of the.
Yeah, like I said, a sensory room. If the lights are just a little too much for you, if there's too many balloons falling, perhaps.
Well, I tell you what. One of the reasons we're so glad that you are there is that we want that constant comparison, pro and con. Just what is different between Republicans gathering to nominate and celebrate their candidate and the Democrats gathering to nominate and celebrate their candidate. This should be a lot of fun.
Do they, real quick, Zach, because we're all listening here learning about this, do they bring you a list every day of the lineup of who's going to be there, who's speaking?
Yeah, Joe Biden tonight.
Right. And then just some other things of highlights, like be aware of all of this so you can kind of coach us on what we're maybe going to watch.
We don't have a list yet. At the RNC, we'd get a list pretty late, sometimes halfway into the day. You know, the speeches don't start till later in the evening, so we don't have a full itinerary yet. But like John just said, President Joe Biden's going to speak tonight. I think Hillary Clinton's going to speak as well tonight as well. So we know some of the bigger names, but the full lineup has not been handed off to us yet.
All right. Well, listen, it sounds like you could use a little motivational pep talk. So I want to share a pep talk that Vice President Kamala Harris delivered to a group of high school football players over the weekend from Pennsylvania. Have a listen.
And by doing that and all that that requires, which is the hard work, the practice, working as a team, knowing that you will be undefeated even if you don't win every game, but no circumstance or event or moment will defeat your spirit.
You can be undefeated even if you don't win every game. Remember that.
That's on Hillary Clinton's wall.
Oh, it doesn't quite compare with Remember the Titans. You guys remember the Titans?
I don't want them to gain another yard.
You blitz all night. And if they cross the line of scrimmage, I'm going to take every last one of you out. You make sure they remember forever the night they played the Titans.
Yeah, I think... I think that part of Kamala's speech came later.
Night and day difference there.
Yes, Remember the Titans. That was true to life. That was the real deal. That happened. All right, 46 minutes after 6. Zach, thanks for checking in. We look forward to hearing from you again. And we thank our friends at All Red Heating and Cooling making this all possible this week here in Chicago. It is Lars Larson right around the corner here at 6:47 in the morning.
6 o'clock, songs from the 60s in the 6 o'clock hour here on Talk Radio 570 KVI. A shorter than expected commercial break that none of us were really
where did John go?
Keeping an eye on. John is down the hall. John's out of the studio.
Hey, you know,
we'll get him back here in a minute. There's Mark Christopher. I'm Phil Vandervoort.
Phil, we can mention real quick, those of you on Queen Anne Hill, if you didn't hear, and some of you probably by now did hear, we had a serious fatal on the counterbalancer around Prospect and Queen Anne Avenue North, right there on the counterbalancer.
Fatal crash early this morning.
About 4 a.m. Still closed there. This was a motorcycle, two people on the cycle crossing the counterbalance on Prospect. It was a fatal incident. They crashed into a fire truck. This is Ladder 6. This is one of the largest aerial
hook and ladder situation.
Hook and ladder that we have
big,
in the city of Seattle. That was damaged. We're not hearing any firemen. They were in response to a call, not with the cycle, but to another call coming down the hill. But anyway, it's still closed there on the counterbalance right around Prospect as that investigation continues.
All right. John's rolling back into the studio here. Just we didn't give him enough warning that there was shorter than expected commercial break, John. So we're back, John.
Did he show up early again? Lars Larson.
We didn't have as many commercials in the break that we thought. We weren't paying attention, and all of a sudden the break was over, and you were still down the hall. But Lars is ready to roll.
I think so.
I think I hear his voice right now. Lars Larson.
Did you mean John was dawdling back into the studio? Wasn't that what you meant to?
I was taking my time.
On his scheduled OSHA break, right?
Yes. Usually I've got like another 2.5 minutes, and I guess it was a remarkably short ad break, perhaps because we had sponsorship for our Chicago
with
correspondent.
With Allred helping out on our coverage from the Chicago convention.
Young Zach giving us some live flavor to what's
I expect to talk to Zach, too, about the not-so-democratic Democratic convention.
Well, it's a convention that tonight we'll be celebrating the guy who, as Maureen Dowd, it doesn't get more liberal establishment than Maureen Dowd of the New York Times put it yesterday in her column. She said, a coup that's good for the party and good for the country is still a coup.
Yep. I read her piece. She is a good writer. She writes from the left, but she's a very good writer, and she's right. And it's amazing to me that both the mainstream media and the rest of the Democrat Party is ignoring the fact that they have simply said, this is who your nominee will be. No voters need be involved in that decision.
But let me give you an example of how unself-aware the media are. CNBC, okay? They've got a reporter there named Kate Doerr.
Oh, yeah.
And Kate Doerr had an article on CNBC on their website about J.D. Vance pushing President Trump's policy to raise the child tax credit to $5,000. Okay?
Yep.
Here's the headline. Vance wants to raise the child tax credit to $5,000. Here's why that could be difficult. Here is the headline 4 days later when Kamala Harris actually called for an even more expensive tax credit.
Right.
Here's the headline. Harris calls for expanded child tax credit of up to $6,000 for families with newborns.
Of course, because if Democrats propose it, it's always good, even if it's bad. And when Republicans propose the very same thing, you have to cast it in a bad light. The hypocrisy is stunning.
Last week, CBS, the same thing. Oh, wait, it was Donald Trump on taxing tips. Here's why that could be problematic. And then 2 months later, Kamala Harris wants to give hospitality workers a break with no tax on tips.
Trump's proposed it. They were like, oh, a government watchdog agency says it'll cost the federal treasury $250 billion over 10 years. But when Kamala Harris proposed it, CBS said, Kamala Harris says workers on tips shouldn't have to pay taxes on the tips. Completely different standard.
So watch the mainstream media completely ignore which vice presidential candidate talked about how he only enjoys white man tacos. And how well would that go over if said by, say, J.D. Vance?
Yeah, no, that's another Tim Walz, who, by the way, is continuing to weigh down the ticket of the Kamala Harris ticket. The media are trying not to talk about stuff that's getting out anyway.
You mean like stolen valor?
That's part of it. And then, of course, his DUI, when, you know, he got a DUI in the mid-90s. That's not the scandal. The scandal is that when he ran for Congress 11 years later, he and his campaign completely lied about it. I mean, completely made stuff up about it. So, he wasn't drinking. They did a blood alcohol draw. Yeah, yes.
He was very drunk.
He was very drunk. The charges were dismissed. No, they weren't dismissed. He took a plea bargain to reckless driving. He was allowed to drive himself to the station. No,
he
wasn't.
Was he going 40 miles an hour over the limit, which truly is reckless driving? That's the kind of driving that gets people killed.
He was doing 90 in a 55.
Yep.
So, yeah. So, in other words, they just literally made stuff up to try and save himself politically. So it's not just his extremism, Lars, and it is the issue of character, not just when it comes to his military record, but to virtually everything in the guy's life. Anyway, Hour number two of The Commute. Right around the corner, we're going to get local here on The Commute. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. We've got a very busy day ahead, including the Democratic National Convention out of Chicago. But let's start this hour on the local front, shall we? Danny Westneat, Seattle Times, just had a very provocative, interesting column, and I love it when liberal columnists start to channel John Carlson. And understand, I'm not saying, you know, plagiarize or imitate. No, no, no. I think he got there all on his own. But when Danny Westneat starts saying things that I have said and have been saying for quite some time, it gives you an idea of just how weary they are of the far left. Now, Danny's not on the far left. Danny is really someone who matches the city of Seattle pretty well. He's a liberal Democrat, science background, a very observant guy, who is increasingly uncomfortable and squeamish about where the left is going. I have been saying for a long time that the left is the leading threat to freedom, prosperity, equality, and unity in this country. There's no other force that is as dangerous. Their ideas are destructive, and liberals are afraid of them, which is why the left has so much disproportionate influence in city politics, though, you know, about 8 years overdue, it looks like the voters of Seattle finally are starting to figure this out. They made what you would call a mid-course correction. It's still going to take many, many years to dig out from the damage done in terms of crime, homelessness, drugs. Oh, my God, drugs. Anyway, Danny was writing about basically a exhibit on how black and Jewish and Asians in Seattle have faced the struggle of bigotry and prejudice. That sounds like a pretty good idea. Only one problem. Some people, employees at the Wing Luke Museum, didn't like the fact that Jews were included. The three-part cultural exhibition basically collapsed. And the headline of the story in the Times, the column by Danny Westneat, was "Seattle, the liberal city, just book banned a cultural exhibit," which is true. The way it was set up is each group was given three panels to tell its story, mostly about struggles about past discrimination. For blacks, it would include redlining and segregation. For Asians, it would include the Chinese Exclusion Act. It would include Japanese internment during the Second World War. For Jews, it would be a completely undisguised culture of anti-Semitism. I mean, there's a reason there's a Jewish country club south of downtown. It's because Jews couldn't golf at the traditional country clubs or be admitted to the finer clubs and organizations. Anyway, just examples. But Wesneit, when he heard about the controversy, said, "It's astounding that this rather tame historical recap was deemed too controversial or slanted to be displayed. It's ridiculous that a group succeeded in blocking it and shutting it down. And it's discouraging that an exercise, i.e. the three-part exhibition, to call out hate has only led to more hate." And then he says this, "Seattle, we need to talk. The liberal intolerance in this town is becoming intolerable." Where have you heard that before? So the panel at issue in the exhibit is titled "The Oldest Hatred, Its Newest Form." It says bluntly, today, anti-Semitism is often disguised as anti-Zionism, with Jews everywhere expected to defend the actions of Israel's right-wing government. That caused an uproar. Protesting staffers at the Wing Luke Museum said it conflates anti-Zionism as anti-Semitism, and in doing so erases violence against Palestinians. Several dozen walked out and demanded the exhibit be scrubbed and subjected to, quote, community review, close quote, which means a censorship committee, frankly. Wesneit goes on to write, the exhibit did get revised to edit out a disputed sentence objecting to college protesters chanting the phrase "from the river to the sea." I don't know why. That's what it means. Jews get out. But anyway, but the entire exhibit got shut down anyway. This past week, Jewish groups in limbo with the conflicted museum gave up, announced they're going to try and host it alone without the other co-sponsors next month. The poster panel that supposedly conflates bigotry with criticisms of Israel seems to me to be doing just the opposite. It seeks to distinguish the two. It says Jews here in America aren't responsible for what's going on in a foreign country. It's wrong to hold them to it based on their ancestry. The poster includes examples. One from last fall, when a Mercer Island synagogue was defaced with graffiti that read, "Shame on Israel and stop the killing." The poster explains this was harmful because, quote, it's as if the Jews of Mercer Island could control the Israeli government, close quote. As one local Jewish leader told Cairo 7 about the graffiti, this is not legitimate criticism of the Israeli government. This is attacking Jews for being Jewish. If that's not hard enough, writes Wesneit, the very next panels in the exhibit are about a similar strain of bias, only applied to Japanese Americans during World War II. The central point is the way Japanese Americans got blamed for the actions of a foreign government based solely on their heritage was wrong. It's of a piece with how the graffiti and multiple other incidents likely have made assumptions about local Jewish people. Is this really that incendiary? Wesneit writes. Are these distinctions really that hard to grasp? It was for Seattle. he writes. What the exhibit is saying is don't take your anger about the Middle East conflict out on local Jews who are independent, free-thinking humans. For a highly fraught subject, this is pretty basic stuff. That the museum ultimately capitulated is just sad. The museum director wrote in an op-ed that the Wing Luke Museum doesn't have the resources to survive prolonged crises. So the bottom line is the Jews are now on their own. They were, again, I love this line by Wesneed. The Jewish groups are on their own, marooned there in classic Seattle style with everyone shrugging and issuing earnest statements about inclusivity. So we basically just book banned a cultural exhibit. It doesn't seem like anyone's really objecting to it. Yeah, Danny. Like they didn't object to Antifa throwing chunks of concrete at police officers during the riots and the showdown for closing the East Precinct. There wasn't a single Seattle legislator, not a single one, they're all Democrats, who rose to object to that going on. And the destruction, the crime, nobody angry about that either. Again, I have said this so many times over the years. The same liberal activists, liberal media, liberal political figures who will immediately take offense if you mispronounce Kamala Harris's first name or if you don't use pronouns when someone wants you to, or if you disagree with displaying pride flags, but not the American flag, the same people, or who will object if you display an American flag and not a pride flag, the same people who do that just kind of look the other way when the bigotry comes from their side. And it does come from their side constantly. I've had black police officers tell me of the vile things that leftist demonstrators have said, trying to entice them into clubbing them so they could get the headline and file a lawsuit. The most bigoted people in the country are those on the political left. And the reason why is that the bigots who are on the right know that they are bigots. And they will admit that they are bigots. The bigots on the left refuse to acknowledge that they're bigots. They say that they're, well, what they were saying, this exhibit, that we're inclusive. And you know, we believe in hearing all views, and we want it. So they're incredibly inclusive when it comes to, say, LGBTQ and then five or six other letters of the alphabet. But when you have this exhibit, which, again, is remarkably tame, but it made Jews look good. And it made violence against Jews for being Jews look bad. Therefore, we must walk out. We must object to this even being held. That's what the left always does. They, when a liberal doesn't like what you say, a liberal will argue back. A leftist will accuse you of hate speech and demand that no one listen to you. A liberal will discuss and debate. A leftist, a progressive, will not. They're not interested in debate. They lose and they know it. They'll lose and they know it. So, Danny Westneat concludes, I think about the word liberal a lot because it has about a dozen different meanings outside the political context. All of them are great, open-minded, tolerant, generous, unprejudiced, to name a few. And the best one, being a liberal means committed to freedom of personal belief and expression. Seattle still gets called a liberal city. I'm not sure we're deserving of that word anymore. Oh, like I said, better late than never. Yeah. Seattle has, and I've said this for many, many years now, Seattle is the most intolerant city in Washington State. And by the way, other liberal cities, most notably Olympia, aren't far behind. It's 20 minutes after 7. Philip J. Vandervoort III, right around the corner with a social media sweep. Good morning. 19th day of August for the radio program of record. There's Philip J. Vandervoort III with the second social media sweep of the morning. What do we got?
Oh, more Democratic National Convention coverage in Chicago. And what's going on with those protests? We're all curious about that. The social media sweep, sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. I plugged the search terms.
Yet. I mean, hell, they're not up yet.
Well, I guess not today, but there was one yesterday. I plugged the search terms Chicago protests into the search function on X/Twitter. And the first post it brings up is a video clip of the crowd gathered in the street to do their march. And the very front of this group of people that's marching, giant, maybe 12, 15 foot wide banner. And it's got the colors of what is supposed to be the flag of Palestine. And then it has the words, feminists and LGBTQ and people, LGBTQ plus people for a free Palestine. So feminists and LGBTQ plus people for a free Palestine. And I thought, Iran is basically backing Hamas right now. Iran is the one that's kind of helping Hamas.
Pays all their bills, yes.
Yes, and that's what precipitated the attack on Israel at the music festival back on October 7th, and then the Israeli reprisals in Gaza for that. So I thought, I'm just going to search the terms gay rights and human rights record in Iran, since Iran is essentially supporting Hamas in all of this antagonism and attacking of Israel. And Wikipedia, the main entry on Wikipedia about LGBT rights in Iran says, the government of Iran is considered to be one of the most discriminatory towards homosexuals in the world. Human Rights Watch, and this is again just a function of a Google search, Iran, discrimination and violence against sexual minorities. In 2007, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad declared that Iran has no homosexuals in its country.
Not only did that, he did it at Columbia University,
oh, okay.
And everybody burst out laughing.
Okay. And then Center for Human Rights in Iran, that website, says lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people in Iran face severe legal and social discrimination in all walks of life. And you can easily find these search results from, I'm guessing, Human Rights Watch and Center for Human Rights in Iran are not conservative-backed websites. I'm guessing they're you know, along the lines of the Amnesty International and things like that. And it's just astounding that people would gather with a sign that says feminist and LGBTQ plus people for free Palestine and not be aware of what Iran is doing in Iran, separate from supporting Hamas.
I tell you what.
But there we go, right?
We can broaden this out a little bit, Phil.
Yeah.
What is the human rights record for LGBTQ for gay people in Gaza? In fact, I tell you what, show me any Arab Muslim nation that tolerates women's rights, much less gay rights.
Okay. I just searched gay rights and human rights record in Gaza. The Wikipedia entry for LGBT rights in the state of Palestine says homosexuality in the Palestinian territories is considered a taboo subject.
Well.
All right.
Again, I think that Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, put it so well. He said that gays for Palestine is about the same as holding up a sign that says chickens for KFC.
Mm, good reminder. Yep. Right. Lead them to the slaughter, essentially. One other final one here. The Center Square, the political news website, the Center Square for Washington, has posted a story that says the city of Olympia is going to begin drafting a resolution that would urge the state and federal government to explore reparations for descendants of enslaved African people. And this kind of parallels what's going on in California. So this is the city of Olympia. And my big question is, how do you set the criteria for who qualifies?
Well,
Barack Obama, as an example, would not qualify.
Well, since Washington was not a slave state.
Also a good question.
Yeah.
Also a good question.
But the other thing to consider is not only was Barack Obama not the descendant of a slave, he was the descendant of a slave owner.
Based on his father?
Remember, his mother.
Oh,
his mother is white,
mm-hmm.
and ironically from Mercer Island. And her family tree includes slave owners.
Okay.
You want to know another politician who is not descended from slaves, but is descended from slave owners?
I don't know.
Kamala Harris.
Oh.
I'm going to make a date. So, John, is your...
I love Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yep. Product of Chicago, South Chicago area where they originated from. Still making the hits, still bringing the crowds, so they continue their tour. And as you know, the fun of the show, John, and we get emails on it here, the fact that we play these requests here from our listeners that just say, I need 10 or 15 seconds, like of Earth, Wind, and Fire here.
You got it, man.
Yeah. So then I had a few inquiring about a song, or do we even call it a song? Let me go back to 1972 of the conventions that year. Can you throw out a few names of some of the political people that were in power at the time?
Well, Nixon was running for re-election, and his opponent was George McGovern.
Right. You're doing good.
It was the year that Henry Jackson first ran for president and didn't do that well.
Okay. Kissinger was another name.
Our senator from Washington State. Henry Kissinger was Nixon's Secretary of State.
Okay.
Spiro Agnew was the vice president and would be out of office in scandal a year later.
Now go to
Nixon a year after that.
Go to the lead TV news people on the networks, let's say like CBS at the time.
Cronkite.
Okay. NBC, what would be?
I think John Chancellor.
Chancellor would be another one. Okay. David Brinkley.
The Huntley Brinkley was before John Chancellor.
Yeah,
and then you had Frank Reynolds and Howard K. Smith.
There you go.
And they brought, sometime in the 70s, they brought in Barbara Walters to co-anchor with Harry Reasoner. And he clearly did not like her. And the chemistry between the two of them was not good.
Okay. So keeping all these names, and somebody said, Mark, Christopher, why don't they do the fun of a convention like back in 1972? All of a sudden, this hit the airwaves of many pop and rock and roll stations in Seattle and across the country. A little flashback, John, and everybody listening, do you remember this? And they just used clips of popular songs of 72 in what was called Convention 72 by a group called The Delicates. Just one more.
There were a whole series of songs like that that used to use clips from songs and insert it into serious parody dialogue. One more example of what was entertainment.
It was wacky morning zoo radio in the 1970s.
That's how they got the kids involved. Like, oh, maybe we should watch the convention.
That's what
here
they called it. Morning zoo.
Yeah.
Entertainment.
That was one of the starts of it. One of the first many of us heard in Seattle.
All right. Thanks for finding that. That was national, by the way. Some of those parodies were so clever, they actually hit the charts.
They did. This one hit the top 40. Casey Kasem even featured it on American Top 40. the delegates with the Convention 72 climbing the charts.
So, speaking of conventions, we've got our own young Zach joining us from Chi-Town, from Chicago. And it turns out that he's not alone. There are other people from Seattle back there. Shama Sawant is back there. She's not a delegate. She's not an alternate. She's out in the streets protesting. And Jonathan Cho just bumped into her on the streets outside the convention. And this is what happened. And this is real. This is not going to, we're not going to insert.
Not a parody here. This is actual
music. No.
Encounter
this
in Chicago.
Jonathan Cho was out covering the pro-Hamas, anti-Israel protests. And who does he see? Shama Sawant. So, of course, he calls out to her.
Shama Sawant, how you doing? Jonathan Cho, here from Seattle. Hey, do you still regret not running for city council? Do you want to come back?
She looks at him, and she is fleeing. She's walking away like a girl who sees a guy she once went out with and wants nothing to do with anymore.
Ms. Sawant, why are you here in Chicago? What is the plan this week at the DNC? Does Ms. Sawant want to talk?
No responses.
No.
Great to see former Seattle council
I can't
Shama
see
Sawant.
You. I don't know you.
But she does not want to talk.
Oh, Jonathan's going to have a lot of fun there in Chicago.
Great catch by Cho to recognize that it was Sawant and then just call out her name as he's walking up to her. And he must have been just a couple feet away from her. And she turns and looks at the camera. And it's that, you have to be bleeping kidding me.
Yes.
This guy is standing next to me right now.
All the way to Chicago to get away from him. Well, anyway.
She walks into the crowd to try and get away.
Yeah,
basically.
And he was, by the way, he was just there at a Chronicle to follow and tape the demonstrations. And let's face it,
was holding a microphone of her own. So she's doing some whatever correspondence or reporting or audio.
The thing of it is, everyone just wants to know, is it going to get violent? How convulsive are these mobs going to be? That's really what this all gets down to. Anyway, let's check in with young Zach, who is live from the Democratic National Convention on its first day, though, as he pointed out last time he joined us, even though they're 2 hours ahead, most of the delegates still not showing up and not a lot going on back there. What's going on, young Zach?
Well, I'm happy to report I think I am in a Shama Sawant-free zone. It didn't appear that she had the proper credentials on to get in the building, so I'm marked safe from that for now. But not much going on right now. We're still waiting for the delegates to arrive. I've been told Congresswoman Del Bene might be joining our sister station here shortly, so we might get a comment out of her undercover if I can. But, you know, we're just setting up. They're doing mic checks, doing sound checks, stuff like that. Some of the dignitaries will probably start rolling through soon. Hopefully we can get some interviews to share with the audience. But mostly just waiting for things to get underway, like we talked about last time, kind of checking out the scene, the floor. If anybody watched the RNC on television, the floor was much, much larger in Milwaukee. It was much easier to for media to get down there. We were limited in the number of media credentials we were issued to get down onto the floor because there's so many delegates here. Mm-hmm. In fact, the delegations spill up into the 100 section of United Center where the Chicago Bulls play. Washington is up kind of on the right-hand side of the stage, up in the 100 section. They're not even down on the floor. So when things get underway, it'll be difficult for media to be down there. And I think you'll see that play out on TV as well.
You can always tell the delegations that matter the most. They're the ones who are seated on the convention floor, relatively close to the main podium. So you're going to see Wisconsin. They'll have great seating. Michigan will have great seating. Arizona, Georgia. In other words, the same swing states that had preferred seating during the Republican convention are going to get it during the Democrats as well.
And, of course, California front and center.
Well, that comes with the territory since
indeed
it's her home state. Anyway, young Zach, thanks very much. I look forward to hearing more. And we want to thank once again our good friends at AllRed Heating and Cooling for presenting, sponsoring Zach's coverage live from Chicago. It is coming up here on 746, The Commute with Carlson. Kamala Harris wants her political ideas to be taken very seriously. So we are going to take a serious look at what she proposed when we were off the air on Friday, when she unveiled her economic plan. We'll tell you what that economic plan would do and why it has not gone over all that well so far. When we return on the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI, good morning. Now, there are a lot of young people who would love to get a job on a presidential campaign. I mean, it's as exciting as it gets. And if you apply for a job, this according to the Daily Mail, Charlie Spearing, just filed this report, their senior political reporter in the nation's capital. The presidential campaign for Kamala Harris has a job application form that includes 9 different options for your personal pronouns. This is to show their commitment to diversity and inclusion. So you have he, him, and she, hers, and they, them, right? But there's 6 others. There's XE and XEM, Z, Zem. There's also I am, EYEM. By the way, I checked this out to see if it was a parody.
Yeah, some sort of a gag.
It's not. The job application for the Kamala Harris presidential campaign gives you 9 pronoun options. One of them is Hoo-Hoo, which I thought was a name for a woman. Well, never mind. I thought it was a polite term for never. We're not going there. But H-U-H-U pronouns are third-person, gender-neutral pronouns referring to both a man and a woman. So if you choose to go by who, you are looking for a gender-neutral pronoun that refers to both man and woman. If you simply have not made up your mind yet. There's also F-A-E and F-A-E-R, fair, which indicates that you are a gender fluid person, meaning that you just kind of wash one direction and wash another. You just kind of go back and forth, fluid. But non-masculine gender fluid. And I love this, sometimes of Celtic origin. Oh, I see. So those are some of the 9 separate pronouns that you get to choose from when you apply for a job on the Kamala Harris campaign. When we come back, Kamala Harris gave a serious policy speech where she laid out what she would do to bring inflation under control. She also made it clear who she blames for inflation. Spoiler alert, it's not her or Joe Biden. We will tell you what she recommended and why it's not going over all that well with any but the most progressive, ideologically driven people on the left. Again, all that straightforward. The Commute with Carlson, Talk Radio 570 KVI. It is coming up on 5 minutes to 8 o'clock, hour number 3, right around the corner. Back we are, the John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. Thank you very much for letting the John Carlson Show, The Commute with Carlson, be part of your listening day. If you want to get in touch with us, all you need to do is text us, 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. You could call as well. Kamala Harris has now gone for almost 4 weeks. I think today is week 4. Without a single sit-down interview and without holding a news conference. She was walking in somewhere and answered a couple of questions from a reporter, from some reporters the other day, and that's it. They have been keeping her, and think about this. They believe they've got a better shot at winning if you don't hear what Kamala Harris has to say in response to questions. If the only things you hear from Kamala Harris are her prepared remarks or remarks prepared for her, then that's the best way she can win. And the only way you can get away with a strategy like that is if you think the media are in your pocket. And we have given several examples of exactly that. But sometimes, even when she makes prepared remarks, she gets into some trouble. And that is what happened on Friday afternoon. She unveiled at least their attempt at having a serious policy proposal to fix the economy. First of all, if you're going to fix something, you need to know why it went wrong in the first place. What is it that didn't work that caused inflation to spiral higher than it's been any time since Jimmy Carter was president? And, of course, the answer is a massive influx of government spending after COVID ceased to be a major threat. You know, when the government shut down the economy, then the government was going to have to help pay people's bills, businesses that were shut down, literally, not allowed to open. Of course, the government was going to have to dig deep to pay some bills. But then, you know, a year later, Biden was pushing through and signing massive increases in government spending. That is what helped set off the inflation spiral. And it is still, you know, they're now bragging. They are now bragging that they have brought inflation down to twice as high as it was when he took office. He took office, he inherited inflation 1.5%. They were popping champagne corks because they got it down to 3% or 2.9%. But they're not blaming government spending. They are blaming corporations. They're blaming corporations for price gouging. Or as Kamala Harris misspoke, called it price gouging. Instead of letting the market set wages, she would prefer the Federal Trade Commission decide what food prices ought to be. This is called command and control. Marxist economics. This is, by the way, back in the early 70s, when almost every government policy was a terrible government policy, Richard Nixon decided to try and deal with inflation by adopting wage and price controls. Okay. He actually froze wages and prices for 3 full months. And the minute the prices came off, prices shot up. In other words, the bottom line is price controls don't work whether Democrats or Republicans do them. Now, Nixon was thinking, you know, in previous emergencies, you know, like a war, we have used wage and price controls. So I think I'll go ahead and call this the equivalent of a war. And so he adopted them. And again, they failed terribly. So that lesson is there for Kamala Harris and the Democrats to learn from, but they don't learn from it. Again, Kamala Harris and her running mate and her boss, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota, none of them have spent a day in the private sector in their entire lives. Their entire lives have been spent in government. Yeah, damn right that makes a difference. You know, if you don't have experience running a company, building a company, working for a company, then you better have people around you who do. They don't. So for them, when things are not going well in the economy, it's not, hey, how do we get the market back on track? How do we, you know, whip inflation? Or in the case of the mayor of Chicago, when stores have abandoned entire neighborhoods, it's just so dangerous and they're losing money. He says, well, fine, if they won't serve the people, we'll have government-run grocery stores. Here's a better idea. How about making neighborhoods safer again for stores to locate in? No, let's just have the government do it. That is how these people think. And it gives you an idea of just how radical she is. Here is Kamala Harris on Friday pitching her idea of price controls.
And I will work to pass the first ever federal ban on price gauging on food.
All right, so price gauging versus gouging.
This is Chris Cuomo.
She made a mistake.
On News Nation, analyzing her speech.
We noted it. Second, going after corporations is popular. Doing it about inflation is popular. 60% of us believe corporations are to blame for it. The question is, what do you do, right? Blame versus change. So Harris says she's targeting price gouging. I don't really care about gouging, gauging. I don't care, all right? You got to take the level of talent where you find it. We don't have great talent in our politics right now. We got to wait for better people to want to get involved in what is such a poison process. But this is who we got.
Ouch. That's Chris Cuomo.
Damning with faint praise or something like that.
Very much a liberal. Brother of one Democratic governor of New York, the son of another Democratic governor of New York.
Yeah.
Chris Cuomo will never be the Democratic governor of New York. Anyway, someone who took a serious look at Kamala Harris's idea was Catherine Rampell, who writes for the Washington Post. And she had a headline that was just classic. The headline was, "When your opponent calls you a communist, maybe price controls aren't such a great idea." That was her column in the Post. Then she went on CNN and said the following. Again, this is Washington Post economics columnist Catherine Rampell.
If you look at the legislation that, as I mentioned, is already in the Senate, led by Senate Warren and Senator Bob Casey and a slew of others, the particular way that this is written, which is likely to be the template for any proposal that Harris would eventually embrace, is especially bad in that it just bans excessive prices, grossly excessive prices, grossly excessive profit margins, and says that the Federal Trade Commission can use any metric it deems appropriate to decide what that would mean, which basically says, like, it's not going to be markets, it's not going to be supply and demand that's determining how much your grocery store charges you for milk or for eggs. It's going to be some bureaucrat in DC, which seems like totally unworkable, first of all, for the FTC to be deciding like how much Kroger charges for eggs in Michigan. But it also would be very bad for markets. We've seen this kind of thing tried in lots of other countries before: Venezuela, Argentina, the Soviet Union, etc. It leads to shortages, it leads to black markets. You know, plenty of uncertainty. And beyond that, the specific way this bill is written might actually increase prices.
Okay. In other words, this isn't such a great idea. That, again, was not, you know, Larry Kudlow or Steve Moore, our chief economist. Larry Kudlow, of course, on Fox Business News. No, that's Catherine Rampell with the Washington Post. Again, this is real obvious stuff. It doesn't work. You know, they tried to tax and cap the earnings of oil companies in the 70s with an oil windfall profits tax and an oil import fee and all that. Look, the windfall profits tax, rather. And Ronald Reagan campaigned on a one-word alternative. Deregulation. He said, we're going to lift the caps. We're going to get rid of this short-term windfall profits tax. We want companies to be profitable, so they will invest into growing. Companies that are profitable grow. Companies that are not profitable don't grow. We want growth. So I remember Jimmy Carter in his debate with Ronald Reagan, which he did not do well, but he tried to mock Reagan, say that's his whole program. Yeah, it worked. Price of gasoline came down. All of a sudden, what we had been told was that we were facing a worldwide shortage of oil. The world was running out of oil. Reagan deregulated oil, and that ended both the sky-high prices for oil, and what do you know? People now had the incentive to go out and look for oil, and they found lots of it. So you've got Kamala Harris basically emulating the worst aspects of Jimmy Carter and the Richard Nixon administration on economic policy. That's why it's not going over all that well. And by the way, it's not going to make things better. It'll just make things worse, which seems to be what they've made a specialty out of. Fighting crime and making it worse by doing the wrong things. Fighting homelessness and making it worse by doing the wrong things. Fighting the scourge of drugs, yeah, and making it worse. Many, many more people dying because they're doing the wrong things. So here they go again. And by the way, the one thing this should reassure you of, not in a good way, but you should be reassured that this will not be a moderate or moderately liberal administration if they win. It will be a left-wing progressive administration. Think of how the Seattle City Council governed 3 years ago. That's what we are looking at with Harris and Walz, both radicals. It's 20 minutes after 8. Philip J. Vandover III, right around the corner with his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists on Happy Monday, August 19th. Ladies and gentlemen, his favorite segment of the day, social media from socialists, Philip J. Vandover III.
And it goes right after what you were talking about in the last segment with the economic illiteracy from the Kamala Harris campaign. And let's get into that here with a tweet from Oregon Senator, and as KVI's Lars Larson will point out to us, resident of the state of New York, Ron Wyden.
Oh, yeah. No, and he's been back there since the 80s.
The social media suite sponsored by Muckleshoot Casino Resort. The aforementioned senator from the state of Oregon, Ron Wyden, posted this about the Kroger-Albertsons merger plan. It would bring Kroger grocery store chains that own QFC and Fred Meyer in with Safeway Albertsons. Ron Wyden posted, the largest supermarket merger could have awful impacts on consumers looking for affordable groceries and prescription drugs in Oregon and nationwide. And that's why I'm working with Rep. Jayapal, and that would be Pramila Jayapal from Seattle. I'm working with at Rep. Jayapal and others to seek a preliminary injunction this month in this case. They want to block this possible grocery store merger. So if this economic brain trust that is Ron Wyden and Pramila Jayapal thinks this proposed merger is a bad deal, then I think we can probably all make an educated guess about whether or not the rest of us should line up for or against this merger proposal. And then Reason Magazine points out on their website, the digital Reason Magazine, One of the hottest items in the political food fight is unquestionably the ongoing litigation of the Federal Trade Commission attempting to block the Kroger-Albertsons grocery store merger. A host of Democratic lawmakers recently joined the legal fight, arguing that any potential merger would raise prices and increase food deserts and disproportionately hurt unionized labor. And as part of her new food price plan, Kamala Harris included a call for aggressive antitrust crackdowns in the food and grocery industry, mentioning that Kroger-Albertsons merger by name. And Reason Magazine goes on to post, none of the arguments against the merger make much sense on the merits, but the Federal Trade Commission and the Democratic Party writ large are stacking the legal deck to achieve a predetermined outcome that conveniently aligns with their political priorities.
Sure, sure.
So like I said, if you know Ron Wyden and Pramila Jayapal are for it, then you probably realize that's not the most economically prudent thing in the world.
Pramila, you'll notice that a lot of Democrats are just kind of keeping quiet about what Kamala said.
Okay. And based on the Big Friday speech?
On price controls.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of keeping quiet. She has received praise from Pramila Jayapal. Which, again, just gives you an idea. Okay. If it gets her excited.
Another moment in my forthcoming book, Economics, from people who don't understand economics.
They've never been in the private sector.
Yeah. Here's a screen grab that's attributed to CNN, posted by a guy in Seattle that social media profile says, I run a newsletter podcast called Volts, as in voltage, about clean energy and politics. David Roberts is his name. And the screen grab he adds says, from CNN, says 3 weeks into her presidential run was first time the Biden's campaign pollsters, now Kamala Harris's pollsters, held a deep dive call with Kamala Harris's inner circle to discuss what she's been saying on the stump. Over the line came a lot of praise, but also suggested tweaks. First, said Democratic numbers man Jeff Garin, summarizing their analysis, that Harris should stop saying, we're not going back. So that phrase has come up from Kamala Harris's speeches and extemporaneous speaking. And then it says from CNN, it wasn't focused enough on the future, was the argument in that case. And then the second suggestion for Kamala Harris was lay off all the weird talk. It's too negative. And the Seattle guy, David Roberts, posted, I hope Harris and Walls are smart enough to ignore the cadre of Democratic consultants with a long and rich history of failure. So he likes the weird talk, even though the consultant told Kamala Harris it's probably too negative. And I just cracks me up that here's
you listen to this guy right here. Yeah. This guy, he's got your best interests. Yeah. He clearly wants you to win.
And it cracks
you
me
listen
up.
To him. The you guy, ignore those consultants. You listen to what this guy says.
The guy in
the more
Seattle
weird talk,
says,
the better.
Yeah,
it's you.
I hope
Let
Harrison
them see
Walls
the real you.
Are smart enough to ignore these consultants. Yeah, the same consultants who told us for a year that Biden was just fine. Ignore those ones.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is coming up on 8:31. John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. We've talked about the convention in Chicago. We probably should tell you a little bit more about Chicago. And we will. Things that you want to know that maybe the media and definitely the delegates and most assuredly the mayor of Chicago wishes you would not know. Here we go. The John Carlson Show, Talk Radio 570 KVI. The Democrats are meeting in the Windy City, Chicago. This is the third convention in the last 60 years. They met in Chicago in 68. That is a historic convention for all the wrong reasons. Things went terrible. There were rioting in the streets and almost a riot in the convention hall. And the Democrats limped out of Chicago in pretty tough shape. Their nominee was Hubert Humphrey. Many people thought it was going to be Robert F. Kennedy. But he was shot and killed 2 months previous. And then in 1996, the Democrats went back with the Clinton campaign for re-election. And that was a celebration. And that was a very successful convention in Chicago. That was when Richard Daley Jr. was the mayor, and Chicago was still a city that works. It no longer is. Let's start with the schools. The Chicago Teachers Union has 28,000 members. One of their former organizers, Brandon Johnson, is now the mayor of Chicago. It is a radical union. They have praised Venezuela. They call for Israel to stop shooting. The head of the Chicago Teachers Union sends her son to private school. That's interesting, but maybe even more intriguing is that almost one-third of Chicago's public school teachers send their kids to private schools. Spending per student is now $24,000 per student. That does not count capital expenditures or debt service. That is a almost more than doubling in the last 12 years. So spending per student has doubled in the last 12 years. During that same period of time, reading proficiency for grade schoolers and junior high school students plummeted 63%. That's reading skills. Math skills went down 78%. Less than one in four juniors in high school can read at grade level. Among black students who are high school juniors, only 11% can read at grade level. Among students at large, less than one in five, 19%, can do math at grade level. Among black students in Chicago, 8%. Student enrollment went down 9% between 2020 and 2022. Spending, however, went up 35%. So basically, the more they fail, the more money they get. One of their high schools was built to accommodate 912 students. Current enrollment, 35. But it's getting more staff people, unionized staff people. So the total staff for 35 students is 30 staff people. One quarter of Chicago schools are more than half empty. The teachers' union wants them to remain open. This is the same teachers' union, according to columnist George Will, that wanted the schools closed during the pandemic longer than almost every other school district in America. The union also wants to stop and end the gifted student program that is currently the curriculum for 12 high schools. So again, this is one thing the union says, that you need to end the gifted program. It doesn't promote equity. chronic absenteeism has been a problem. 4 out of 10 students are absent 18 days of the year. Among teachers' union members, 43% missed 10 or more days in the previous calendar year. Their new contract demands include 9% wage increases every year. They want no more police officers in the schools. They want a 100% electric school bus fleet. They want teachers, in addition to their wages and benefits, to get a housing subsidy. They also want every school to have a gender support coordinator. So that's just what Chicago's schools look like. Overall, Chicago's lost more than a quarter of its population since 1950. Their poverty rate is 36% higher than the U.S. average. The black unemployment rate in Chicago is the highest among America's 15 largest cities. Their sales tax is the highest of any major city. You know who's close to them? Seattle. Chicago's sales tax is 10.25%. Seattle's is 10.1%. By the way, this matters. Illinois also has an income tax. Washington State does not. Property taxes have doubled in 10 years. Downtown office vacancy is more than 25%. Crime is higher in Chicago than any other major U.S. cities. Robberies are up 21% in just a year. Violent crimes in schools are up 26%. Chicago's led the nation in murders for 12 consecutive years. But its arrest rate for homicides is lower than it's been in the last 24 years. That's the Chicago they are holding this convention in. While delegates are heading into Chicago for the convention, retailers like Walmart have left 4 Chicago neighborhoods. Just too dangerous, just losing way too much money. Speaking of danger, the 4th of July four-day weekend, 109 people shot, 19 of them shot to death. The weekend of August 3rd and 4th was more typical. 48 people were shot, 5 of them fatally. Again, this is Chicago. Everything they seem to be doing is making things worse. Not merely treading water and not making things better, actually making things worse. Their populations declined 9 consecutive years. Education is as bad as I told you. Crime has soared. Almost half of the city budget, almost half of Chicago's annual budget goes to debt service and government employee pensions. So this is what government run by progressives looks like. There hasn't been a Republican mayor in literally a century. This is what progressive government looks like. What do you know? It's failing as much in big city, the biggest city in the Midwest, as it's failing in Seattle and San Francisco and Portland. Maybe, just maybe, it's not the people. Maybe it's not the geography. Maybe, just maybe, it's the policies that are resulting in these terrible, terrible effects and consequences. So glad you're listening to the John Carlson Show this morning. It is 47 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning. Did not go through the Chicago public schools. This guy's got his math right on.
I think Jake was from Joliet, or was that not where he graduated from?
Elwood, too. I don't know what he did much for studies here.
It is 10 minutes to 9 o'clock on the John Carlson Show. And again, over 1,100 lightning strikes across Puget Sound Saturday night. Isn't that right, Rebecca Stevenson?
What's most exceptional is the number of lightning strikes we had. Yesterday, we had 1,151 lightning strikes. And today, we got up to 107. You think about the maximum amperage that came with these lightning strikes. Let's say 78,000 there. 78,000 amperes. Boy, that could power 780 homes, small homes, in Seattle. That is the superpower electrical action we had this weekend.
Whoa.
There's a new power source we should work on here for the future.
By the way, guess who passed away? It was announced just about an hour ago.
Just earlier this morning.
Phil Donahue, who helped pioneer daytime talk TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know that there would be an Oprah Winfrey if there hadn't have been a Phil Donahue.
No, yeah.
I mean, she basically took his format, at least, and she made it even bigger.
Well, she made it kind of, you know, between us girls.
Sure.
Kind of.
Sure.
You know, it was a women's show hosted by a woman.
And Phil Donahue would do the hard-hitting issues, but then he would also do kind of more slice-of-life type stuff.
He started.
Oprah Winfrey definitely did that too.
When Oprah Winfrey appeared on the scene, she started getting, you know, when she was competing against him, on competing networks, she was getting more and more of his listeners. So he started doing more lifestyle kind of stuff. But what he did do is he changed a daytime TV, because at that time, daytime TV shows were Merv Griffin, Michael Douglas, the Mike Douglas Show from Philadelphia, Merv Griffin from L.A., Dinah Shore had a show, and it was mostly kind of a, you know, it mimicked late night Johnny Carson.
Yeah, Carson in the daytime. Talking to the celebs, right? Yeah.
And what Donahue did is he would actually take on a hard news topic. I remember when he came to Seattle, here's how big he was in the early 80s. He came to Seattle 1982 and had taped a segment of his show at the Seattle Center Coliseum, which today we call Climate Pledge Arena. It was packed. 13,000 people went to the Phil Donahue taping.
In 82, wow.
And the topic was whether they should close down the Bangor submarine base because it had nuclear submarines during the whole anti-Reagan, anti-nukes
Cold War stuff right after the 1980 Olympics were boycotted.
Standing up to the Soviet Union would blow up the world, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it was a huge movement. And so when his producers found out there was a movement afoot to shut down the Trident submarine base in Bangor, that became a segment. But the thing of it is, people loved it and people tuned in. And so he would do things like, and then he would do conservative lifestyle, you know, culture, what we today call culture war issues. He would have, you know, provocateurs on the show, like, you know, a debate over whether to do away with Miss America. And then he'd bring on Milton Friedman.
Yeah, there's a pretty famous clip of Milton Friedman, the economist, speaking on the Phil Donahue show that keeps cropping up on YouTube and now other social media platforms like Facebook, Instagram, X and Twitter.
His first guest was Madeline Murray O'Hare, the famous and militant atheist who launched the lawsuit to get prayer out of the public schools. So anyway, he passed away at the age of 88. The show that he pioneered was syndicated in 1970, and it ran for 26 years.
Wow. Married that girl.
And he married that girl, Marlo Thomas.
Know how many years on that?
Oh, my goodness. I'm
hearing 44.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. He met her when she appeared on his show. She was, of course, a famous movie actress at that time, the daughter of Danny Thomas, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, get out there. Don't miss Ari and Zach this afternoon. Get out there and enjoy this day. It's going to be gorgeous.